morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Yud Zayin. As a result of us learning yesterday, as a result of the day itself, so we are behind. We're behind by a little over an amud. What I did on Monday is I covered an amud and a half, a little just short of that. And what I plan on doing today is the same. I'm going to cover covered a daf and a half on Monday, so I'd like to do the same today, which means that we have our work cut out for us. We have a lot to do, a lot of Gemara to get through. If I go well enough and I'm clear enough, we can get to the end of the parak. On Monday, we last left off in Tezayin Amud Aleph. We're about two-thirds of the way down by Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar asked the following question. We noted that the Mishnah says that when it comes to a shevet is going to be judged in front of a court of 71. Now, what does that mean exactly? So the Gemara really struggled with that, because what does that mean, a shevet sinned? In other words, shevet is not an entity. Shevet is a construction of people. So in other words, you'll judge the people like you judge people. Well, what does that mean, a shevet? The Gemara entertained that maybe it's talking about Nir and Nidacha, so that's a little bit difficult, because as we learned yesterday, 2 days ago now, when it comes to the Irni Dachas is only Rubo Shel Shevet, it's only the majority of a Shevet, according to one opinion, and it's not the entire Shevet, so it's very difficult to assume that our Mishnah is talking about an entire Shevet, or I should say even, an entire Shevet serving idolatry. So one of the Pshatnim that we offered back on Monday, when we saw the Daf, is that it was referring to the head of a Shevet, a leader, a Gadol. And when you're talking about a leader, so if he's going to be tried in front of a court, it's going to be a court made up of 71. And that's true whether it's a leader or a shevet. It's also true whether it's a Kohen Gadol as well. And that was what we offered as a pshat in the Gemara back on Tezayin Amud Aleph. We're just picking up right where we left off at that point in time with a question asked by Rebbe Elazar. By Rebbe Elazar, Shoshal Kohen Gadol Bekama Lemisas Balim Didei Midaminale Odom Lemisas Balim Da'ama Midaminale. So let's say it's an unusual case, but the abstract, the conceptualization over here is very good. That you have an ox of a Kohen Gadol and is subject to the death penalty. Now we know that when it comes to an animal that's being tried for the death penalty, so we already learned back in the Mishnah that you do it in front of a court of 23. So now this ox of the Kohen Gadol, so there's an argument to make that you should be tried in front of a court of 71. What's the argument? The argument is, look, in other words, the ox is owned by a Kohen Gadol. If the Kohen Gadol himself was being tried, he'd be tried with that in front of a court of 71. So maybe the ox is going to be tried the same as its owner. Or the Gemara says, no, maybe it's not a good argument. And maybe the argument just simply is that an ox or any animal that's tried for the death penalty is going to be tried in front of 23, and this be no different. So the Gemara says, look, we're not going to answer the question, because we don't have an answer to the question, but when you're asking a question, there are a number of assumptions that are made every time you ask a question. So the Gemara says, so what do you see from the question? You see that he assumed a certain thing. What did he assume? That when it comes to the money of a Kohen Gadol, Gemara says that was pasha, that was obvious. So pshita, the Gemara says, well, it is obvious. Meaning, why would you think that when adjudicating a monetary case of a Kohen Gadol should be any different? So the Gemara says, because we would have had a Havamina, and the Havamina would have gone that, look, we have this special halacha now when it comes to the Kohen Gadol, and that is that when he's being tried, he's tried in front of a Sanhedrin. So I might have thought that, okay, fine, that's going to be true regarding any adjudication of a Kohen Gadol, and that means then that even if it's a monetary case, but being that it's a Kohen Gadol involved, so automatically should jump up to 71. That's a Havamina. So the Gemara says that the Kamash Malan, the Chiddush is that we don't subscribe to such a Havamina, and that even in such a scenario, he's only going to need a court of 3. But the question of Sharashol Kohen Gadol, the Gemara leaves that a question unresolved. Ein Motzian. Okay. We are now up to the next part of the Mishnah, and we're talking about going out to war. So going out to war is going to be a more than an executive order, more than a judicial order. It's all of the above. And what the Gemara now is going to go through the process of describing at what point in time are we allowed to go out to a Milchemes Rishos. Now, if you remember back in the Mishnah, Milchemes Mitzvah, so we do no consultation because we fight the Milchemes Mitzvah regardless. There was a Rashi back in the Mishnah on the first Daf of Sanhedrin, a very interesting Rashi. Rashi says, you know what the example of Milchemes Mitzvah is? Yoshua. When Yeshua goes in to conquer Eretz Yisrael, so that's Milchemes Mitzvah. As we pointed out back then on the first Daf, Rashi over there, it's just to read Rashi at its simplest level, it's a little bit tricky, it's a little bit difficult, because defending Eretz Yisrael is also a mechemes mitzvah, Amalek is a mechemes mitzvah, so, okay, a little more analysis on that Rashi and on the Mishnah, why Rashi only over there only points to Yehoshua. But in any event, if it's quote unquote a voluntary campaign, so that requires the permission of everyone. Now, when I say everyone, we're going to be clear now in terms of who we mean by that. So, the Gemara quotes the pasuk. I'm sorry. The Gemara quotes the sources. So, the Gemara now takes step by step and takes us through the pasuk and darshans the pasuk. So the Gemara says, "Yamod who Zemelach v'chol bnei Yisrael too ito Zemushoch Mechama." So the consultation is done with the king, and it's also done with the Meshoch Mechama, meaning that is the Kohen who is basically the chief chaplain of the army, the Meshoch Mechama v'chol ha'eda Zu Sanhedrin, and the Eda, which as we already pointed out, is a reference to the Sanhedrin. So therefore, you only go out to a Mechemes Rishus when you consult with the king, the Meshuch Mechama, and the Kohen Meshuch Mechama, and the Sanhedrin. V'dimla Sanhedrin hu dekam lehu rachman dil shalaburim v'tumim. Gemara says, now wait one second, maybe the whole purpose of the Sanhedrin is just to ask and inquire of the Urim v'tumim whether or not this is going to be a successful campaign or not. But maybe the Sanhedrin is not there for the purposes of Rishus. So the Gemara says, Ela ki had amar av achab rabizne amar av shemun chasida. So the Gemara cites another source to this halacha that we need to be in consultation with all these people before going out to Mechemes Rishus, and the Gemara quotes another Gemara. This Gemara is found back in Brachos, and you may recall. Kinar yatalu lamalam imitasu shal David. There was a harp over the head of David HaMelech. Kevin shigia chatzos alayla ruch tzvonis menashev esbo. He got to midnight. The northern wind started blowing. Rashi gives us a tutorial of how the winds work and when the winds blow. And I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now. Look at Rashi for a step-by-step tutorial of how the winds blow, literally. I don't mean that as a euphemism. Vayamanageme elav, and this is the first known alarm clock known to mankind. So then the northern wind blows in, blows on the harp, plays the harp, and it is a wake up call for David HaMelech. It's chatzos laila. Mi'ana ya David omed vosik b'torah achalam amud hashachar. And so his schedule was that from chatzos until amud hashachar, so he'd be learning Torah. Kevin shalam amud hashachar nichnasu chacham yisrael atzlo. Now when you get to amud hashachar, so now Chachamim come in. Amelo adenenu amelach amcha Yisrael tzrichan lafarnasa. So they are now going to be dealing with national affair. And what is number one issue on national affair? Well, I guess number one is defense. But number two is going to be the economy. So, and the report that he got on one particular morning is that the economy is not good and the people need parnasa. So amelahem lechu v'isparnasu zemizeh. So David HaMelech comes up with a very simple economic plan, and that is let them all just simply profit one from another. Let them all do business. Amrlo ain't a comments must be a thari. So the Chachamim's response is a couple of responses, but it basically points to the same idea. It's insufficient, meaning it's just not going to be enough money circulating in order to satisfy everybody. So ain't a comments must be a thari. Comments is the fistful of flour that normally is taken off the mincha, and that fistful of flour is not enough to satisfy the ari, the lion. It's just basically, it's not enough. Or, ein habor mismale mechul yaso. Or if you ever dig up a pit and you try to fill it in with the same earth that you dug it up from, it's not going to fill the pit. So basically, two ideas, but speaking to the same point, it's just not enough. So amalem luchu pishu yadechem begedud. So then David HaMelech says, okay, so you know what's good for the economy? War is great for the economy. Okay, which, by the way, historically has been proven to be so. War is great for the economy. Rashi over here says very simply, it's not Rashi over here. Rashi elsewhere says that it's great for the economy because, meaning, right, the way I think about it is that it's great for the economy because then industry is required in order to, you know, in order to wage the war. But Another way to look at it is also simply from the spoils of war. And again, now more resources, more income comes in. In any event, war is good for the economy. So the Gemara says, Miyad Yoatim Achitofel. So the Gemara says, okay, so now they're ready to wage war based on a poor economy. So the Gemara says, so what do they do? So now they go into consultation, and basically we're learning this Gemara right now because, again, we are going to take a look at who do we need to get Rishus from in order to wage a Milchemes HaRishus. So Miyad Yoatim Achitofel Nimlach Misanhedrin Vesholim Ba'urim Vetumim. So they go to Achitofel, they go to the Sanhedrin, they ask on the Urim Vetumim, and now the Gemara quotes the pasuk that speaks to this idea. We are on the very top of Tazanim and Beis. So the Gemara now quotes the pasuk in Divrei Yamim that speaks to the succession of who we're asking in order to go out to war. So first we turn to Achitofel. So Achitofel is a Yoetz that is the advisor. Achitofel was an advisor to David HaMelech. Unfortunately, Achitofel later in his life turned sides and went on to the Avshalom side and ended up killing himself. But at this juncture, we're assuming that he's a faithful advisor to David HaMelech. V'cheinu omar v'atzas ha'achitofel sheryat, u'benayo ben Yehoyada zin Sanhedrin. Benayo ben Yehoyada is the head of the Sanhedrin. If Yasser Elov Urim V'Tumim, now if Yasser is a reference to the Urim V'Tumim, v'cheinu omar, u'benayo ben Yehoyada ala kresi v'ala plesi. So kresi plesi is a nickname, so to say, for the Urim V'Tumim. Lam nikra shmam kresi v'plesi. And why is it referred to as kresi v'plesi? Kresi shekortin devrayim, because they cut their words, u'plesi shemuflai ma'aseim. And their deeds are wondrous. Meaning you ask the Urim V'Tumim a question, and you will get a response. It is a way of connecting and communicating with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. V'achar kach sarzva Melech Yoav. And then the generals consulted as well. So you see that from this succession of who we asked regarding David HaMelech, who was ready to wage a Milchemes HaRishus. So again, another source that speaks to this idea of inquiring amongst the king, the Sanhedrin, and the Kohen. And the Kohen who is going to be consulting with the Urim V'Tumim. This idea that his harp woke him up in the middle of the night is the Gemara quotes a pasuk that also speaks to this idea that the harp wakes him up at night. Ein Mosifa Nalia. We're continuing now in the Gemara. We're talking about annexation. If you're going to annex part of Yerushalayim, so once again, that's going to be done by a Sanhedrin of 71. So as we get to the end of the Mishnah, so we're now going over all the different judicial processes that require a court of 71, right? The Mishnah basically took us progressively greater. We went from 3, sometimes 5, sometimes 7, and then for capital cases, 23, and now we're up to all the cases, 71. It's not actually the truth of the matter is, previously we also talked about that, regarding a Mechemes Rashus, you need 71, regarding Shevet, you need 71. So this is just now a continuation of other cases that also require 71. We are now describing the annexation of Yerushalayim. I say Yerushalayim because Rashi said that back in the Mishnah. It's going to seem pretty clear from our Gemara itself. We're talking about Yerushalayim, and the reason why we're speaking specifically about Yerushalayim is because once you annex and add to Yerushalayim, you are giving that new annexed portion the same level of Kedusha as Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim obviously has a certain amount of Kedusha that allows us to eat Maaser Sheni, Netzer Ravai, right? The carbon of Ashlamim, many halachas that pertain to Yerushalayim proper, and so therefore, when annexed and added to Yerushalayim, so therefore you're imbuing it with more Kedusha, and it needs to be done with the Sanhedrin of 71. So the Gemara goes on to explain, Menahani Mili, where do I see this from? Amar Rav Shimi Barchia, Amar Kra. Kechol Hashem Amar Ha'oscha, Eitz Tavnis HaMishkan, V'chein Ta'asu. So V'chein Ta'asu L'doros Habayim. So the Gemara says that the understanding is that this is what you're going to be doing for all future generations. So Meitzav Rava Kol HaKelim, and by the way, parenthetically, the limit over here is from the fact that this was an instruction to Moshe. Moshe, as we've said already a number of times, is analogous to the Sanhedrin of 71. So whatever is the requirement for Moshe, so now you move forward in generations, so that is going to be a task of the Sanhedrin Hagadol of 71. Meisav Rav Kol Hakem Shasam Moshe Mishich Hasam Mikadshan Mikan Ve'elech Avodasam Mishchan Chasam. So the Gemara is bothered by the following. We know that when Moshe set up the Mishkan, so the Kelim of the Mishkan were anointed, and the anointment invested the Kedusha into the Kelim. However, from that point going forward, so how do you invest Kedusha into the Kelim? Usage. Meaning the first time usage actually is going to be an investment of the Kedusha into the Kelim. So the Gemara says, "V'amai name of Echentasul Adaros Abayin." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but you said that Moshe serves as the role model in terms of how things are done for the future. We just learned that from Moshe Rabbeinu, who was required for purposes of construction of the Mishkan and annexation. So therefore, for future generations, the Sanhedrin is required to do so. If Moshe is going to invest the Kelim with Kedusha through Mashiach, through anointing with the oil, so why don't we say that the same thing is true for future generations as well?" And specifically to be done by Sanhedrin. So Shani Hasam Damakrav Yim Shechem VeKedush Osam. So the Gemara says, yeah, but in terms of investment of Kedusha into the Kelim, so the Gemara says that we have a special limud that it was only applicable for Moshe and Moshe alone. It says VeYim Shechem VeKedush Osam them. And the Gemara darshan Osam BeMashiach VeLo LaDoros BeMashiach. Only for that generation, but not for future generations. VeYimah Osam BeMashiach ULeDoros Im BeMashiach VeAvoda. Gemara says, okay, but maybe the exclusion just simply means like this. For Moshe's generation, there's only one way to invest Kedusha into the Kelim, and that's through Mashiach. Going forward, it may be that there's an option, either Mashiach or usage. Amar Papa, Amar Kra, Asher Yishartu Bahem Bakodesh. HaKasav Tolem B'Sheiris. So the Gemara says no, because we have another pasuk that tells us, how do you make a kli kaddish for the Beis HaMikdash? Shesheiris. Sheiris means service. Usage. So the Gemara says, Elo Asam Lamali. So the Gemara says, okay, now that we know that, so let's go back. Why do I need even an exclusion from Moshe Rabbeinu regarding Mashiach? Ilav Osam Hava Amin L'Doros B'Mashiach Uve Avoda Daksi V'Chein Tasu Kasa Rechmanu Osam Osam B'Mashiach V'Lo L'Doros B'Mashiach. So the Gemara says like that, like this. Because I would have thought as a Havamina that what Moshe was only required to do was be Moshe, in other words, the anointing of the oil, in order to give the Kelim Kedusha. From that point going forward, as a Havamina, the Gemara says, what I might have thought is that for all future generations, we have to do Mashiach and Avoda. Meaning we have a pasuk by Moshe that says Mashiach, and then V'chein L'Doros, so the same thing is true for future generations. On top of that, we also have the pasuk regarding Sheiros. So I might have thought that both are required. So when the Torah says Osam, that is me, that's a limitation, and that means that for future generations, I only need chinuch, only usage, but not Mashiach. Continuing in the Gemara, we're halfway down on to Zayin Amud Beis at the two dots in Osin Sanhedros v'chulei. So Menalan. So we're talking now about creating a lower court. So a lower court is only going to be appointed by the higher court. So Kedash Kacham Moshe Duki Sanhedros Moshe B'Makom Shivim V'Chad Kai. So the Gemara says, look, Moshe once again serves as our base role model. In other words, and he is equivalent to the Sanhedrin, and he is appointing lower courts. So that means for all future generations, so we're going to have Moshe appointing the lower courts. Now, of course, when I say Moshe, I don't mean Moshe per se. I mean what he embodies, what he represents. What he represents is the Sanhedrin. So therefore, the Sanhedrin, for all future generations, is going to be appointing the lower courts. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara quotes, "Abraisa minayin shem ma'amidim shoftim liYisrael." How do I know that I appoint a shofi for the Jewish people? Tanu Rabban, shoftim titain. Shochin liYisrael minayim. How about officers, meaning law enforcement? So Tanu Rabban, shochin titain. So in other words, basically what the Gemara is doing is working off the pasuk in the beginning of Parsha Shoftim. The pasuk says Shoftim v'Shoftim titain, and basically the Gemara is taking the word titain and applying it to first Shoftim, then Shoftim. And we're going to do this again and again. Shoftim l'choshev v'shev v'minayin. How do I know that we have to appoint a shofet for every tribe? Tamalam Shoftim l'shvatecha. Shoftim l'choshev v'shev v'minayin. How about law enforcement? Tamalam Shoftim l'shvatecha. Shoftim l'chol ir v'yir minayin. And now we did it by tribe, now we're going to do it by city. Tamalam shoftim l'sha'arecha. Shoftim l'sha'arecha. Shoftim l'chol ir v'yir minayin. Tamalam shoftim l'sha'arecha. Okay, so we did it now as a Supreme Court, then we did it as per the tribes, and now we're doing it as per the cities. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Echad Memuna al Kulam, Shamar Titain Lecha. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that there is one who is appointed over everyone. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, L'Shvatech V'Shavtu Mitzvah B'Shev L'Adon Eshivto. There is a requirement for the Shevet to judge his own Shevet. Exactly what that means, not clear from the Gemara itself. And Rashi over here, Rashi over here doesn't comment. Yes, Rashi does comment. I take it back. I read the Rashi. V'lo yachu b'nei shevet zeh lebeitin shel shevet acher. The way Rashi understands Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's ruling is as follows. Let's say you live within a certain shevet, and you're going to be tried, and for whatever reason, the local courts are not doing it. There is no local court, whatever the case is. And now you're going to go not to the Supreme Court, not to the Sanhedrin, but you're going to go to the head of the basin of the shevet. So what the Gemara is telling us, according to Rashi, within the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, is basically the idea of jurisdiction. Meaning, this idea is not a new idea. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says that when you're living within a certain shevet, you're going to be judged by that particular basin of that particular shevet, and you cannot go to another shevet to be judged by another shevet. So basically, the idea of jurisdiction. It's found right here. Why should that be? So I heard, I don't have a source for this, so I'm saying this now. Just, it's hearsay, but I really liked it, but I don't know who to give proper credit to. So the reason behind this is that every shevet is a little bit different than one another. Not every shevet is following the same exact menhagim. And so when you go to a court, you want the court to understand basically not only the halacha, but also what the minhag is around in your provincial area. So if you go to a different shevet who is judging over a different tribe, over a different menhagim, so he's not going to understand the finer details of what your locale is and what your menhag is. So that is a possible explanation in terms of why it is that you necessarily have to go to the basin of your particular shevet. Okay, Enos in Yer Nidachas. We're now moving on to the next case of the Mishnah, and that is the Yer Nidachas. The Yer Nidachas is going to be tried by a basin of 71. Again, let's review. And Yer Nidachas is a city that's subverted, and the entire city is being Ovid Avodah Zarah. It doesn't have to be the entire city, it's the majority of the city is being Ovid Avodah Zarah. So now the city itself is labeled as the Yer Nidachas. The city will be destroyed. The people that are actually serving idolatry are going to be put to death, as we pointed out. Now that it's Yer Nidachas status, so although normally the death penalty for Avodah Zaraskila, but now a subverted city is going to be judged with chenek. Sayef? Okay. Sorry. Doubt just crept in my mind. I'm sorry. It may be Sayef. Okay, I'm sorry about that. And then that's number one. Number two is that, and the people who didn't actually serve Avodah Zarah, they're not going to be put to death. It's only for the people that are. But in other words, for the people that are, because now the city has status of Eir Nidachas, so they're going to get a different death penalty. And additional to that is that all the possessions in the city are going to be gathered into the center of the city and are all going to be destroyed. They're going to be burned in a fire. You're going to learn the third parak of Sukkah that a lulav that belongs to the Yer Nidachas you can't use for the mitzvah of Dalaminim. And the Gemara over there explains why. Because since it needs to be destroyed, so even in its current state, we view it as if it's not there. The Gemara's expression over there, Kitzute Mechta Shire. It's been totally pulverized. So the Gemara over here now is going to be discussing the trial of the Yer Nidachas needs to be done by a court of 71. Minani milam Rabbi Chaya bar Yosef amar Rabbi Hoshea amar Krav oseses ishehu osavishahi ish vishah tamotz l'sharech v'yatamotzes kol ha'ir kula l'sharecha. In terms of an individual who's being over to Avodah Zarah, so they're taken out to the local Beis Din, meaning l'sharecha means your local Beis Din. Obviously it's a capital crime, but assuming that your local Beis Din, it can make up a Beis Din of 23, so then you're taken out to the local basin. However, if it is the city who is now being over to Avodah Zarah, so they don't go to the local basin, they go to the Sanhedrin. So Ein Osin Yer Nidachas Bisfar. We learned back in the Mishnah that a city on the border cannot become a Yer Nidachas, even if you have the majority of that city is being serving Avodah Zarah, so it cannot be converted into an Yer Nidachas. It doesn't get Yer Nidachas status. Again, for the people that serve as Avodah Zarah, so they're going to be tried individually. But the city itself does not get that status. My time, Mikrebecha, Marechman, Avolomen Asfar. So the Gemara right now just simply says it's a drasha, meaning mikir becha means something which is interior. And if the city is all the way at the edge, at the border, so then you can. But right now we're having it as a drasha. Velosh shalosh, you cannot make three cities in Eretz Yisrael and Yer Nidachas. Dichsiv achas, aval osin achas oshtaim, dichsiv irecha. So it's a kind of like a tension. Meaning on one hand the Torah says that you're making one city in Yer Nidachas. On the other hand the Torah says, Irecha, you can make multiple cities in Yer Nidachas. And basically, what we are now saying is, one or two, but not greater than one or two. Meaning that you can't make three cities in Eir Nidachas in Eretz Yisrael. Tanu Rabbanan, Achas. I'm with you. So the Gemara is going to give us just a couple more details, but just not many more. Tanu Rabbanan, Achas v'lo shalosh. So one means one, but not three. Now the Gemara says, Ata Omer, Achas v'lo shalosh, Oeinu ala Achas v'lo shtayim. What do you mean? One excludes two. How can you say one excludes three? So Kishu Omer, Erecha. So the Gemara says, no, because the Torah also says that your city in the plural. Sahare Shai Mamur. So we know that two cities can become a Nir Nidachas. Ha ma ani mekayim achas, achas velo shalosh. So what is therefore meant is that one to the exclusion of three. Zimna namrav, bebeisin echad, hudein osin ha vishnaim vishlosha, bati dinim osim. Now Rav over here, he vacillated a little bit regarding this limitation of I can't make three Eir Nidachas. So sometimes he would say that this is only for one basin. One basin cannot take the responsibility of making three Eir Hanidachas or Arei Hanidachas, maybe better said. But if you have multiple basins, so, and again, when I say multiple, by the way, remember, we're talking now about the Sanhedrin. So I'm probably, what he means by this is a later generation. So if I have another Sanhedrin, so they can make another Eir Nidachas, even though one or two have been made previously. Or I should say better, two have been made previously. Amarav afilu, and then, the Zimnan Amarav. Now, if you caught Rav on another day, so he said, afilu b'shtayim v'shosha bati dinim, la'olam ein osim. So, sometimes Rav would say, no. In other words, we are capped at making historically only two Arei Hanidachas, but not more than two, even if it's coming from a different Sanhedrin. My time is the Rav Mishum Karcha. And the reason why, says the Gemara, is because of Karcha. Boldness. Meaning that every time you're making an Arei Hanidachas, you're now creating a pocket of unoccupied territory in Eretz Yisrael. And basically, we don't want that. Meaning, obviously, the Torah gives some sort of construct in terms of where it can happen once, it can happen twice. But if we do it more than that, we're going to be creating now vacuums of unoccupied territory in Eretz Yisrael. And again, the Gemara over here now is going to try to further limit this this halacha. Reish Lakish says this is only regarding one location, but two or three locations, then you could do so. Meaning you can exceed the cap of two if it's in different locations. Rav Yochanan Amar in Osim Mishum Karcha, and Rav Yochanan on this point disagrees as well, and he says no, you cannot, because once again, the every time you're creating an Eir Nidachas, you're creating space and vacuum. And that's not a good thing. Tanya Kavase de Rav Yochanan, the Gemara quotes a brisa supporting Rav Yochanan, and Osin Shal Shari Ayaros Menudachos Be'eret Yisrael, Aval Osim Asam Shtaim Kegon Achas Bidu V'Achas Begala. You can make two, one in the south, one in the north, Yehuda being the south, Gala being the north, Aval Shtaim Be'Yehuda V'Shtaim Begala Ein Osim. You can't make two in the north and you can't make two in the south. Meaning even that in of itself is no good because, again, creates too much of an unoccupied area. Now, if you're near the border, you can make even one Eir Nidachas. Because there, it creates now a vacuum, but not just a vacuum, but a security breach. Because now on the border, there is unoccupied territory of Eretz Yisrael, and that allows now for the enemies to come in. And the Gemara says, that's no good. So the Gemara says, yeah, why are you giving me a reason? We had a drusha previously, and so the drusha already excludes the bordering city. What is the reason contributing? So Rabbi Shimon didarish time at the krah. So the Gemara says, well, the author of this price is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon knows the drusha, and Rabbi Shimon goes into every drasha. Meaning what Rav Shimon does is that he looked at a drasha and he determines what's the rationale behind the drasha. And based on the rationale behind the drasha, so he then shapes and formulates the halacha. This is time of the krah. And as we know, throughout Shas, Rabbi Shimon is the one who holds to this principle of Dorish time of the krah, that he always looks for the reasons behind the Torah, but it's more than that though. In other words, not like the Sefer Chinuch. Sefer Chinuch finds reasons behind the Torah so that we can learn some moral and ethics based on that, and it should shape our behavior. That's the Sefer HaChinuch, which really follows the Rambam. But in other words, but Rabbi Shimon goes a step further. It's more radical a viewpoint. It's that when he's Dorish time of the cry, in other words, not only does he give reasons beyond the Torah, but then the halacha is going to be molded based on those reasons. It's a step more than, you know, what we normally think of when we say time of the cry. Sanhedrin Gadol HaHaisa, we are on the very bottom of Tzayin Amud Beis, last line. And we are now in the Machlokas in the Mishnah in terms of what is the number of judges involved for the Sanhedrin HaGadol. Your options are the Tanakhama's position, the Mishnah 71, or Rabbi Yehuda and our Mishnah said 70. And really what's at the core of this Machlokas over here is as follows, and we're going to see it very clearly in the Gemara. Moshe, we know, constructed a Sanhedrin of 70. We know that. In other words, in Parshas Baloscha, which we're going to be citing from extensively over the remainder of today's daf, Moshe made up a Sanhedrin of 70. The question is really simple. And then, is Moshe now part of that Sanhedrin? So in other words, is it 70 plus 1, or is it just 70? So the Gemara now deliberates this very point. We are on the very bottom of Tzayin Amud Beis. Sanhedrin Gadol HaHaisa Maitama de Rabbanan de Amre. So as far as the Chachamim are concerned, this is their argument. Moshe al Gabeim. Amakra v'his yatzvu sham imach. So as far as Moshe being part of the Sanhedrin, the Chachamim say exactly. In other words, the Pasuk says they are going to stand with you, meaning you are going to be part of that Sanhedrin. The Gemara spells it out. V'at behadayu. And you, Moshe, are going to be part of that Sanhedrin. That's how they get to the number 71. Rav Yehuda, imach mishum shchina. Now Rav Yehuda says, no, that's not what the Pasuk means. What the Pasuk means is that they're going to be with you as a result of shchina. Now what does that mean exactly? So Rashi here offers two pshatim. I'm looking at the top Rashi on the Amud. Rashi writes, imach mishum shchina, imach yamdu michutz la'ova v'lo yavo la'o mishum shchina. So the first pshat that Rashi offers is as follows. Look, normally Moshe, you reside in, well, I'm not talking about where he resides, but Moshe has access to go into the Olam Moed because he has a direct communication with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, as far as the assemblage of the Sanhedrin, now remember, Moshe is going to be passing along his Nevuah to the members of the Sanhedrin. So, what you might have thought is that they can be invited into the Olam Moed. So, what the Pasuk is telling us, and this is Rav Yehuda's understanding, is that no. And this is Rashi's first shot. They're not going to go into the Olam Moed. They're going to be outside the Olam Moed. And even though they're going to be receiving some sort of Hashar Shechina, but still it's going to be taking place outside the Olam Moed, not in the Olam Moed. And that's what's meant in the Pasuk when it says, Imach, they're going to be with you outside the Olam Moed. Rashi offers a different pshat, Lashon Acher, Mishum Shechina, Shetisha Shechina Aleim, Etzrichu Liyos Moshe Imahem, Kidichsi Va'atzalti Menaruach Hasher Alecha. Another pshat, says Rashi, is as follows. Look, what's going to happen is that Moshe is going to pass along his ability to be Misnabe over to them. So, the reason why Moshe needs to be with them is for this passing along the Hashras Hashchina. But not because Moshe is a member of the Sanhedrin, but because he needs to pass this along. That's what's meant in the Pasuk when it says, Imach, and that's Rashi's second pshat of the Gemara. Back to the Gemara, what are the Chachamim going to, what are they going to do about that? Where are they going to learn this from? So the Chachamim agree with Rav Yehuda about this point, and they have another pasuk that tells us that Moshe is actually part and parcel of the Sanhedrin, as it says, "Venasu itach," that they're going to carry it together with you, the burn together with you. Rav Yehuda itach b'domim lach. Now, what Rav Yehuda says, yeah, I also know that pasuk. That pasuk is just simply telling me that we are going over the prerequisites of what it means to be a member of the Sanhedrin. We are looking at you, Moshe Rabbeinu, and the attributes that you have, and whatever attributes you have, that should be the attributes of what a Sanhedrin, a member of the Sanhedrin, should have. Rashi over here writes very succinctly, miyuchasim umenukim imum, that you have to have yichus, you have to come from good lineage, and menukim imum, you cannot have any blemishes. Later in the daf, we'll talk about those blemishes are. Virabanan, now the chachamim, mevaakel melech v'nasu itach nafka. So the Gemara says that they learned this point from a different pasuk, and the V'yafa Sanhedrin Gadol Misanhedrin Katan. And now, true, says the Gemara, that pasuk that we just quoted from Parshas Yisro is a reference not to the Sanhedrin Agado, but the lower courts. But still, if the lower courts have to have each member of the lower court being similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, so then it's very simple to conclude that to be a member of the Sanhedrin Agado, you also have to have these types of attributes. Okay, so basically, the Gemara just went back and forth between the Chacham and Rav Yehuda regarding whether Moshe was part of the Sanhedrin. So one opinion is that Moshe, in fact, was part of the Sanhedrin. That's the Chachamim. And therefore, the composite number of members of the Sanhedrin is 71. Whereas, according to Rav Yehuda, no. Moshe was there for Hashras HaShchina. He was there to serve as the role model, as the prototype. But no, he was not actually a member of the Sanhedrin. And therefore, the Sanhedrin was made up of 70.
How could you get even number?
Right. So back in the Mishnah, what we suggested as one possible answer is that, generally speaking, you always assume an odd number unless the Torah tells you otherwise. And over here, the Torah gives us the number 70. So it's a gzeiros hakasav. That's one answer we suggested. Tana Rabbanan, we're on Yuzayin Amud Aleph. We're about 7 lines from the top of the Amud. And 6 lines. And the Gemara now is going to be spending a little bit of time regarding the 70 Zekanim that were appointed by Moshe Rabbeinu. So, and a little bit of background. We know that there was a complaint made by the Jewish people to Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Baloscha regarding the food. We're just tired of the man. And so Moshe really... You know, it seems like he hit his boiling point where he basically couldn't take it anymore. And Kadosh Baruch Hu said, "Okay, so let's set up a Sanhedrin, and they're going to share the burden with you, and then you'll judge the people." And then a Sanhedrin was constructed, and then the Slav came down, and the Parshas Baloscha, and in a nutshell. So the Gemara over here now is going to be focusing on the fact that the pasuk describes how when Moshe gave over his Ashra Shechina over to the 70 Zekanim, so there were 2 that were left over. And the Gemara now is going to be spending a good amount of time describing these 2 that were left over. Tana Rabbanan Veisharu Shnei Anashim B'Machaneh. So there were 2 that were left over B'Machaneh. What does that mean? Yeshomim. So the Gemara, the Brisa over here is going to be giving 2 opinions of who was left over, or better yet, why were they left over. So the first opinion of the Brisa is Yeshomim B'Kapi Nishtaru. That really there were 2 lottery tickets left over in the lottery box. Shebisha'a sha'amalo kashbaruch lamosha asfa li shivim ish. Mizikne yisa. Kashbaruch says to Moshe, I need you to collect 70 people in order to make up a Sanhedrin. So Amar Moshe kates at ese. So now we're discussing basically the politics of making a Sanhedrin. Moshe Rabbeinu said, well, what am I supposed to do now? That number 70 is a difficult number, especially when you consider that there are 12 tribes. Ever shisha mikol sheva v'sheva nimsu shnayim yisrael. So if I choose 6 from every tribe, 6 times 12 is 72. That's 2 more than what I need. Ever chamisha mikol sheva v'sheva nimsu asara chaserim. And if I choose 5 from every tribe, that's going to be 5 times 12, that's 60. That's 10 short of the number that I need. Ever shisha mishevet zev v'chamisha mishevet zah rinimato kinam bein hashvatim. Now if I choose 6 from 11 of the Shvatim and 5 from 2 of the Shvatim. So the two Shvatim who only have 5 representation, so they're going to feel that they were shorted. So ma asa bira shisha shisha vehevi shisha shivim shnayim pitkin al shivim kasim zaken v'shnayim hineh chalak. So what Moshe did is a lottery. So he invited 72, 6 from every shevet. He then made up lottery. I had a lottery box. That's the Kalpi, right? Then Yuma. We spend a lot of time talking about the lottery over there, although the lottery over there only had 2 lottery tickets. Here we're having 72 lottery tickets. So, and on 70 of them, he wrote the word Zakin, and on 2 of them, he left them blank. Bilalam, he mixed them up, but now some Bakalpi, and he put it into the lottery box. Amar Lambo Vitalu Pitkechem. And he tells every one of the 72, go pick a ticket. Kol Misha Labiado Zakain, Amar Kfar Kishcha Shamayim. Misha Labiado Chalak, Amar Amakum Lochafet Becha. Ani Ma'eselach. So then he told everyone pick a ticket if you had the word Zakein coming yours. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, congratulations, you were picked by Kadosh Baruch Hu. And for the 2 who got empty tickets, so he says, look, I'm really sorry, but obviously this was not up to me, this was a Kadosh Baruch Hu.
This was an embarrassment for them. I mean, that Hashem doesn't want anybody to
be okay. Yeah, there has to be a selection process, and two people are going to be not selected. I understand. It's, you know, they're going to be losers in this event. But that's it. Okay, but better than that, right? Better that than Moshe going out of his way and saying you, not you, right? Okay. Anyway, look, I understand. Yeah, right, that's right. Right, David said, not everyone gets a trophy. Okay, very good. I grew up, by the way, with not everyone getting a trophy. I didn't get the trophy. Anyway, the moving along, the Rashi over here explains. Now keep in mind, by the way, because you have to go back to the beginning of the Brisa. Beginning of the Brisa said that there were two tickets left over. What exactly happened over here? So the way Rashi paints the picture, it's that the 70 chose. Now, the last two who were choosing were Eldad and Medad, as will become very clear in just a moment. I mean, if you know the parsha, you know. The last two were choosing Eldad and Medad. They said, well, 70 were chosen, and you know what? It could be that the last two are the Chalakim, or the ones that are empty. We're just simply not going to pick them up, and we'll just excuse ourselves. So they themselves determined that, being that we're the last two, and being that it could be the last two are Chalakim, are the empty ones, the blank slates, so therefore we're not going to choose. And that is what the Brisa meant from the beginning when it says two tickets were left. Now, it's still, that's the way Rashi paints the picture. I admit, it's difficult to understand, meaning assuming that nobody saw what they got, so then they have just as much a chance to choose Zakin as everyone else does. It doesn't change the statistics. Admittedly, it's still difficult to understand, but that's the way Rashi paints the picture. Kayotzi Badavar Ta'omer. The Gemara says, now I'll tell you another circumstance where Moshe had to resort to doing a lottery. Omer. We are now talking about the transfer of Kedusha from the Bechor to Shevet Levi. The numbers went like this. Shevet Levi was made up of 22,000 men, and there were 22,273 Bechorim. And so now, in terms of transferring the Kedusha from the Bechor to the Levi, so it almost worked out perfectly, one-to-one ratio, but obviously the numbers are, there were 273 additional Bechorim. Now, how do they, so to say, just remove the Kedusha from themselves? The answer is Pidyon, right? Pidyon or Bechor. So they're going to have to pay. Well, which of the 22,273 Bechorim are going to have to pay? Only 273. Well, each one of the Bechorim is going to say, look, I have my Levi match. don't go into my pocket. Don't take out 5 shekelim from me. I'm good. Well, every one of them, of course, could say that. So there had to have been a selection process. And again, Moshe resorted to the lottery in order to decide. And the Brisa says same thing over here. So if I go to each one individually, they're going to say, oh, I already have my Ben Levi mesh. Don't bother me. So, he had a lottery, and this lottery obviously was large. 22,273. On 22,000, he wrote the words Ben Levi. On 273, it says, you owe me $5. Okay. Bill Alon. So he mixed up the lottery tickets. Vanasim Bekapi. Amalem Tulupitkecha. Misha Allah Biyadu Ben Levi. Amalo Kfar Padacha Ben Levi. And Misha Allah Biyadu Chamish Shkalim. Amalo Tem Pijoncha Vitzay. And again, wait, if you picked up a Ben Levi, Moshe said, you're good. You can go now. And if you picked up Chamesh Shkalim, you got to pay. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Okay, so all this now was shot number one in the pasuk of the Yisharu Shnei Anashim B'Machaneh. Two were left over in the Machaneh. So in our first shot, there were actually two tickets left over in the box. Rabbi Shimon Omer B'Machaneh Nishtayru. Now Rabbi Shimon says, even one step further, Eldad Omeidad never even went there to begin with. So B'Shar Shem Amar L'Kadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe Asked L'Shivim Ish Amru Eldad Omeidad In Anru'uyim La'osa Gedula. So they were so humble, they just simply said, look, we know we got invited, but we are simply not worthy. We are not going. And so therefore, when Moshe, even before he did the lottery, had only 70 people who showed up, because two people, Eldad and Medad, didn't even show up. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Hol Mi'atatam Atzmechem Hareini Mosif Gedula Al Geduloschem. Kadosh Baruch Hu loves it. In other words, he loves the anava, loves the humility. And he says, as a result of you, Eldad and Medad, being so humble, so therefore I'm going to give you nevuah. Not only am I going to give you nevuah, I'm going to give you extra nevuah. Uma Gedula Hosif Lahem Shanavim Kulam Nisnavu Pasku Vehim Nisnavu Volo Pasku. For the others that came, so they gave temporary nevuah. However, Eldad and Medad gave continuous nevuah. Ma nevuah nisnavu. Now, what exactly did they prophesy? The Gemara is going to have three opinions on this. Amru. Number one, Moshe Meis Yoshua Machnis Es Yisrael La'aretz. So the first nevuah was Moshe is going to die here in the desert, and Yoshua is going to bring them into Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Two, Abba Chanin Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Al Iske Slav Hein Misnabin. They were prophesizing about the next upcoming event in the Torah, which is the slav, the quail that's going to come down and feed the Jewish people, and it wasn't a good thing, if you know the parsha. And alei slav, rise of slav, rise of slav, meaning that's the nevuah that they had regarding the upcoming slav. Rav Nachman Amar Iske Gogomagog Hayu Misnavim. A third opinion is that they prophesized regarding the Milchamas Gogomagog, Shenamar, and the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Yecheskel that speaks to this idea that many years earlier, Yecheskel obviously living at the end of Bais Rishon, many years earlier, right, a half a millennia earlier, approximately, more than half a millennia. So the okay, fine. There were people who prophesied about Gog and Magog. The pasuk says, "Kamar Hashem Elokim Atahu Asher Dibartem Yamim Kadmonim." B'yad Avdin Neviyei Yisrael Neviim B'yamim Ahem Shanim Lavi Osam Aleihem. So the pasuk in Yecheskel speaking about how years earlier people darshan. And we now the way I read the pasuk is Shanim because that's the way the pasuk is read. But the Gemara Al Tikrei Shanim El Shnayim. But the Gemara now plays on the word Shanim, where if you punctuate it differently, it could be Shnayim. Two people prophesized about Gog and Magog. Ve'ezu Hein Shnayim Neviim. And it's a reference to Eldad Umedu who prophesied years earlier about Gog and Magog. Okay, so there are three opinions in terms of what Eldad Umedu prophesied. Now, the Brisa says, as a point to just simply accept, is that the Zikanim, the 70 Zikanim, prophesied temporarily. And they, Eldad Umedad, continued to prophesy. Where is there a hint of that in the pasuk? So maybe it's because the pasuk says that they were misnave velo yasafu. Now yasafu is always a tricky word because it can mean two things, two opposite things. It could come from the word lo yasafu, from the word lahosif, which means to add, or it can come from the word sof, which means to end. So oddly enough, it can go in either one of two directions. So the Gemara says, "Elam yata kol gadova lo yasaf hachanami delo sifhu delo sifhu." The Gemara says, "Think about it. When we have regarding Maamar Har Sinai, where the pasuk says that the Hakadosh Baruch Hu's voice entered into the world, velo yasaf. What does that mean? What do you think that means? You think it means that it didn't continue?" Of course it continued. Ela delo pasuku, meaning that the voice from Maamar Har Sinai echoes on for all generations. So ela hachaksiv, so the Gemara says, so at this point in time, we don't have a good source that teaches us that the Zikanim's nevuah was temporary and came to a halt. So the Gemara says, well, if you compare the word nevuah used by the Zikanim versus that of Eldad Umedad, you can actually see it in the Pesukim. Hachaksiv vayisnabu. Regarding Eldad Umedad, it says vayisnabu, which means that they prophesized, meaning in current tense. And hasam ksiv misnabim. I'm sorry, other way around. Right? Vavahipuch. Sorry. Flip it. Regarding the Zikanim, it says Vayisnabu, which means that they prophesized, but in past tense. And Ksiv Misnabim, Adai Misnabim Vahochim. And as opposed to Eldad Umedad, it says Misnabim, which is a continuous prophecy. Now, Bishlam Lamandar Moshe Meisainu Dixiv Adonai Moshe Kalem. Now, in terms of the three opinions of what they prophesized, I understand the first opinion because look at Yoshua's reaction when he hears it. So he turns to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, "Moshe, I should silence them, right?" And if their prophecy was Moshe is going to die and Yeshua is going to take him into Eretz Yisrael, that is, it may be nevuah and it may be true, but something that should not be broadcasted. So you understand Yeshua's reaction. Elamanda, Amarnach Tarti, my Adonai Moshe Kalim. But if the prophecy had to do with either the Slav or Gog and Magog, like Yoshua, why was he so reactionary? Like, oh, I should quiet them. It's not like they're saying anything that is affrontal to Moshe. So the Gemara says, "Alav Arachar Davle Ketamim Amar Alach Lefnei Rabo." So the So the Gemara says, no, even if their nevuah was not personally an affront to Moshe Rabbeinu, still they shouldn't be saying it. Why? So the Gemara's explanation is because just like a Talmid and Pasken Halach in front of his Rebbe, so too a lower Navi should not say nevuah in front of a Navi who's greater than them. Moshe obviously was the greatest of Nevi'im. Nobody should be prophesizing in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's disrespectful. The Ramban and Chumash, right here, and meaning when I say here, meaning in Parshas Baal Oscha, the Ramban and Chumash says that very often you're going to see a term throughout Tanakh referred to as B'nei HaNevi'im. It's a funny term. The Ramban says, you know what that term means? Basically what we're learning in the Gemara right now. Meaning that you have the accepted, the quote-unquote greater prophet. And during his day, there were prophets also who prophesied, but not the same level. They were referred to as the B'nei HaNevi'im. And as we just learned in the Gemara, what, even though they have the power of Nevuah and the Koach of Nevuah, but they shouldn't do so in front of the greater Navi. And that's what they're referred to as B'nei HaNevi'im. Does not mean, says the Ramban, that they're descended from Nevi'im, right? You know, Nevuah is not a, it's not hereditary. In other words, but it means that they are a younger core of Nevi'im, and they should act respectfully to the greater Navi. Anyway, back to our Gemara. Now, what was Moshe's reaction? Moshe loved it. Meaning, Moshe says to Yoshua, I wish everyone could prophesy like that. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave everyone the power to have that kind of Nevuah, Moshe said, I'd love it. So Moshe was happy. Now, the Gemara says, now, if the Nevuah was either two or three, about the Slav or about Gog and Magog, it's fine. But can you imagine, though, their Nevuah is Moshe's going to die? And Moshe's response is, I love it? It's That's a little bit difficult to hear. The Gemara asked exactly that question. So the Gemara's response is, Lo Saimua Kame. So the Gemara says, well, what they did is they prophesized in front of Moshe, but Moshe didn't actually get to hear the full sentence. Although the sentence starts off with the words Moshe Meis. So what did Moshe hear if not for the first two words? Maybe Moshe only heard the first word. Okay, anyway. My Kalaim. Okay, what was Yoshua actually suggesting? Right? The word Kalaim literally means, right, let me finish them. Well, what was Moshe suggesting? Killing them? I mean, it's hard to imagine, meaning they're just sharing Nevuah. So the Gemara says, Amalei atal lehem tzarchit tzibar vein kalami aleihem. So the Gemara says that what Yoshua was saying is that, look, let me put them in public service, and then they're not going to prophesize anymore. And there's a fantastic Tosfos over here. It's very short. It's very powerful. Tosfos writes on the very top of the Amud, Vim kalami aleihem, perish nevuasam kala, de'ein shechino shorim mitoch atzvos ela mitoch simcha. We know as a rule, says Tosfos, that the only way that you're able to experience Nevuah is only if you're a person who is experiencing joy. Nevuah only comes through simcha. It only comes through joy. It does not come through someone being sad. If you're a public servant, by definition, you're going to be a miserable person, trying to please everybody, trying to serve the people. Meaning, it is a responsibility. It's a good thing to do, but you're just not going to be happy doing it. You're going to be a misery. And as such, being that you're going to be a misery, you won't have the power to be misnabe. That is how Tosus understands the Gemara suggestion.
And you have so many himself.
Yeah. Right? The only thing I could tell you is that he was a happy person. Do I know that? Meaning, you know, if you put everything together, you have to say that. But okay, I understand what you're saying. Right? Leaders of the Jewish people during the Shoftim, during the entire period of the Shoftim. So 4 centuries, they were Nevi'im and they were leaders. Okay. Right. So Minayin Lahavi Od Shlosha. Okay, now we're back at the Mishnah, and what we're describing right now is the idea that that let's say you're at a deadlock in the I'm sorry, not yet. I'm sorry, I'm ahead of myself. For a capital crime, you have to make a base din made up of 23. How did we get to the number 23? So I'm taking us back to the Mishnah. So the Torah uses the word Eda twice. Every time the Torah says the word Eda, that's 10, because the Meraglim were an Eda made up of 10. So that gets me to the number 20. We know that 20, you cannot make up a base name of 20. That's an even number. So you get to 21, but 21 is also intolerable. Why? Because we learned back in the Mishnah that on a capital case, so acquittal can come through a majority of 1, but conviction can only come through a majority of 2. So if I have 21, 21 can result in 10 to 11. 10 saying innocent, 11 saying guilty. Well, that doesn't work. because it's only a conviction of majority of one, and you need a conviction majority of two. So therefore, it says the Mishnah added number two, and that gets you to number 23. Now, what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to take us to the next step, which the Mishnah does not do. You have 23; your numbers are still not going to work. And the Gemara is bothered by this very question. And let's see the Gemara inside. The Gemara says, look, even at 23, what are your possibilities? You'll have 11 acquitting and 12 convicting. That's no good. That's only a majority of one. And if 10 acquit and 13 convict, so then you do have a majority, and you do have a good majority, but it's a majority of three. Meaning, where are you ever going to find a majority of just two? With the number of 23, it's impossible to get to a majority of just two. So the Gemara now is going to take us through a couple suggestions. So the Gemara says one suggestion would be like this. We had a vote. 11 convicted. 12, sorry, let me do that better. 11 convicted and 11 acquitted. So you now have 11 and 11. And then as far as the 23rd member of the Beis Din, so an abstention. He says any OD, I don't know. Okay? And so what do we do with that I don't know? Basically what we do is we table him. In fact, the Gemara is going to say in just a moment, basically he's taken off the bench, although as you'll see, as in terms of a number is concerned, he's still here, but for all intents and purposes, basically he's muted. Now, we have to continue with the trial. What are we going to do? So the Mishnah later on tells us that we're going to add another two. We're going to add another two judges. So now we're going to have a Beis Din of 24. Now I know that's odd, but remember we started with 23. There was one abstention that got us down to 22. We're going to add another two judges so that we got to 24. Now there exists a possibility that those two additional judges are going to vote conviction, and now you will have a case where it's going to be 13 and 11. 13 conviction, 11 acquittal. And in this case, albeit we got here in a convoluted manner, but in this case, we're going to now have a majority of two. Okay. And the Sanhedrin Gedolah, Valibad Rav Yehuda, the Amar Shivim. Gemara says there's another way that you can get to a majority of two, and that is if the trial is done in front of the Sanhedrin Gedolah, which, as we pointed out, a king, a Kohen Gadol, are going to be tried in front of the Sanhedrin Gadol. And according to Rav Yehuda, the Sanhedrin Gadol is constructed of 70. So now you can have 34, 36. And there you can have a conviction with a majority of two. But that only works according to Rav Yehuda, not according to the Chacham. Now Rabbi Abba says that in the example that we just gave regarding the one abstention and the addition of the two, so even though it's an even number, we go forward with an even court. We don't start that way, but if this is how the voting went, and there was one abstention, so now that evens out the number, but lechatchila, you can go on that way. Pshita, the Gemara says, now it seems to be obvious, no, Gemara suggests the following havamina. The one who said any odea. So I might have thought that, look, right now he abstains, but he's still a member of the court and has voting rights. And if he were to say anything arguing in pro or against, we listen to him. Kamashman, the Gemara says no. The Chiddush is, the Haid Kamar Yehudea, Kamandale Sidame. Once he says the words, I don't know, it's as if he doesn't exist. It's as if he's not part of the court. And so therefore, from this point forward, he is totally muted. If he says anything going forward, we don't listen to him. It's such a fascinating point, meaning that as a member of the Beis Din, once you hear the case, once the case is tried, you must, in order to be considered part and parcel of the Sanhedrin, you must take a vote, and that allows you to continue as part of the process of the Beis Din. I'm Rav Kahana Sanhedrin Shirakul Lechova Poshen Oso. Perhaps one of the most famous halachas, everyone seems to know this halacha, I guess because it kind of runs a little bit counterintuitive, but the halacha goes like this. The Gemara quotes it in the name of Rav Kahana. If you have an entire Sanhedrin who are all voting for conviction, so then Poshen Oso. So then we say to the defendant, you can go free. Okay, you're good. And again, there's a counterintuitive nature to this, meaning, right, in other words, it's very possible that the case looks so clear, and it's such a clear-cut case, that every one of the members of the Beis Din said, okay, he's guilty. But yet, the halacha is, Rav Kahana tells us, that he's acquitted. And perhaps, if I may give a rationale, well, first I'll read the Gemara's rationale, my taima, kevin de gemiri, halana sadin, lemav lezechus, v'ani sulochazilei. Because we are going to learn later in the Masechta that when we're about to convict, so we don't convict right away, meaning if we see that the vote is headed towards a conviction, so we don't vote right away, but rather what we do is basically halana sadin, we hold off the vote until the next day, and so basically we are going to try to argue in favor of his defense. And if everyone is voting for a conviction, so then nobody's going to be advancing any kind of arguments over the night in terms of maybe he's not guilty, maybe he's innocent. And so since we're missing this facet of the process, so therefore it's not a good process, and therefore we move for an immediate acquittal. Okay, now that's what the Gemara says. I would like to add to that. And again, take what I'm saying now as my own personal contribution, which means that for whatever it's worth, we add to that that we know that basically Beis Din operates with a mission statement, right? When it comes to a capital case, the mission statement of the Beis Din is Veitzilu Seida, meaning that even though he's being tried for a capital crime, so we should try our best as a Beis Din to not convict the individual. Meaning that is the agenda, that's the mission statement of the Beis Din. If you have every member of the Beis Din who is looking for a conviction, so basically it was almost like a failure of the agenda. The agenda is Vitzilo Seida, everyone finds a conviction, so we failed as an agenda. That's my addition to the Gemara, again, for whatever it's worth. No, everyone acquits, so then we vote immediately. Meaning if we see that we're voting for an acquittal, so then we don't have a lanas adin. We just vote immediately, and then he goes free. I'm Rav Yochanan, and Moshiva Masanedrin Ela Bale Kama. Now, earlier we kind of touched on what the prerequisites are for being a member of the Beis Din. The Gemara is now going to be more specific. So, to be a member of the Sanhedrin, you have to be Balei Kama, you have to be tall. Balei Chachma, you have to be smart. Balei Mara, you have to be a good looking. Rashi says, right, good looking, tall, those are physical attributes. What does it have to be a member of Beis Din and have these physical attributes? So Rashi says, because you have to be imposing. Meaning that there's a certain amount of awe and reverence that comes with them being a member of the Beis Din. And if you are physically imposing, so that creates that kind of awe and reverence necessary to be a member of the Beis Din. Bali Zikna, you have to be of a certain age. The Gemara doesn't give us the age. Usually we assume Zikna, in other words, Lefnei Seva Takum, Va'adar Tepenei Zaken. The Gemara over there, actually, the Gemara in Kedushin does not give a number. The Rishonim over there talk about the number being 70. Okay, but I don't know if that's necessarily true over here. Anyway, Bali Kshafim, you have to be well-versed in sorcery. Rashi over here offers two pshat and why you have to be well-versed in sorcery. One, says Rashi, the first pshat, it's a fantastic pshat, Rashi says, "Lahamis mechashvim abotchem b'kishvim le'natzami de bezdin." If, let's say, your sorcerer's on trial, let's assume that this stuff is real. Okay, I know, I'm not... I happen not to be one of those people, but okay, that's, I'm sorry, I'm a, you know, I just gave away a little bit of my rationalist intuition, but the inclination. But anyway, but let's assume this stuff is real. So in Rashi's first pshat, so if you're trying a sorcerer, it's going to be a little bit hard to kill him in that he's well-versed in sorcery. If the members of the Sanhedrin are also well-versed in sorcery, so they can counter it. Rashi says it. That's the first pshat in Rashi. Yeah, I understand. You're more inclined for this. It's fine. I'm totally fine with that. Yeah. Okay, good. So good. That's Rashi's first pshat. Rashi's second pshat. So Rashi says, also, in other words, you just simply have to be knowledgeable in it, meaning that someone is being involved in sorcery. You can't try a person if you don't know about this, if you're not versed in this kind of discipline. So then how can you try somebody about it if you yourself don't know about it? So as a member of Beis Din, you have to know about it. So that is that's Rashi. Back to the Gemara, the Yodimayin Lashon, And you have to know seven languages. Shalotei Sanhedrin Shamas Mimia Peturgamon. And the reason why is because if you don't speak the language of the defendant, so how are you going to be hearing him? You're going to be hearing him through an interpreter. And that's what we call hearsay. Right? Aid me pi aid. And that's no good. So therefore you have to be able to speak his language in the original. I'm Rav Yudah Marav, Moshiv Sanhedrin El Misha Deal Taras Sheretz. In order to be a member of Sanhedrin, so your power of conception, of abstraction, of analysis has to be so strong that you can say that a sheretz is Torah min haTorah. From a chachma standpoint, that's an unbelievable feat, because the Torah says a sheretz is tameh. And how can your logic now upend a halacha of the Torah? Well, the Gemara says, but you have to at least be able to argue the case. Meaning that's how strong your power of analytics have to be. Rav says, look, I'll take a stab at it. And Rav is going to now share with us an argument in terms of how we could say the sheretz is in fact tahor. Now again, it's almost like an absurd argument, because we know a sheretz is not tahor, a sheretz is tamei. But at least again, from an analytical standpoint, we can argue the point. And it's an abstraction, if you will. So look, it's a kal v'chomer. The logical argument goes like this. Nachash, what does a nachash do? It kills. It kills animals, it kills people. It creates tumah. For every animal that dies, that animal now, that the corpse is in a veil, it gives off tumah. For the person that dies, same thing. In fact, even more, because it gives off tumah so well. So in other words, the snake is a creator of tumah, and yet the snake itself, once it dies, the snake itself is not a source of tumah. A sheretz which doesn't create tumah, so since it doesn't create tumah, how can you then say that once it dies, it is a source of tumah? So this would be a logical argument, a logical construct in terms of arguing that a sheretz is not tameh. But the Gemara says velohi, but the Gemara immediately dismisses the logical argument. Midadave kotz ba'ama, look, a thorn. A thorn, you step on the thorn a wrong way, God forbid, it can kill you. Now, so the thorn now is responsible for death. Are you going to now tell me that the thorn should be, therefore, a source of tumah? It's not. So just because something creates tumah doesn't necessarily mean that it itself is going to be a source of tumah or not a source of tumah. So it's a deconstruction of the logical argument. Let's do a little bit more for today. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Kol Ir She'in Bo Shnayim Ladaber Ve'ech L'Shmo Ein Moshivim Bo Sanhedrin. So the Gemara here talks about now the base minimum members of Sanhedrin who speak all 70 languages. Now, from the previous Gemara, it sounded like every member of the Sanhedrin has to be well-versed in the 70 languages. Now, it sounds like from the Gemara that would be a utopia, so to say, in terms of a Sanhedrin. But in terms of a base minimum, so you need two members of the Sanhedrin to both understand and speak all 70 languages, ve'ech l'shmo, and then another member, a third member of the Sanhedrin, who at least can understand all 70 languages. Let me read that again. So if you don't have a minimum of two who can speak and understand, and one who can understand, so then we don't have a Sanhedrin. Ube Beitar, Havu Shlosha. Ube Yavna, Arba'a. In Beitar we had three, and in Yavna we had four. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, Vishimana Temani. Dan Lifnei and Bekarka. And four students were there on the floor, meaning they were not on the bench itself, and they were involved in the case. Mezve the Gemara challenges because we have a Brisa Shlishis Chachma Revius Ein Lamala Heimenu. The Brisa says that three is good, meaning it's Chachma, and four there's nothing better than it. Meaning, from this Brisa, what it sounds like is that you need a base minimum of three who can both speak and understand all 70 languages. So who Damar Ki Aitana, the Gemara says, yeah, but he subscribes to the following Brisa, which is Titania Willens and a Brisa, Shnia Chachma Shlishis Ein Lamala Heimena. Lamedim Lefne, I'm sorry. Lamala Mehemana, period. So the Brisa says that two is Chachma, and three there's no better than it, meaning that this Brisa seems to side with Rav, which is that in order to be a Beis Din, you need to have a base minimum of two who can speak all 70 languages, speak and understand, obviously if you're speaking, you're understanding, and one who understands but not necessarily speaks. Okay. So we did really well. We are covered with most of today's daf. We almost all caught up from the daf that we missed yesterday. Tomorrow, Mirza Hashem, we finish the perek. Just as a quick recap, we spoke about all the cases in the Mishnah that involve a basin of 71, sourced all of them from Psukim in Psukim through Tanakh, and then just ended off today with the basic requirements, the requisites of being a member of the Sanhedrin.